Speaking on this program is Jim Dearman.
Patience is a very important virtue. And certainly the Bible has a great deal to say about the need for patience. But we need to understand the biblical definition of patience. When we speak of patience from the Scripture, we speak of the idea of endurance and steadfastness under trial, under difficulty, in the face of temptation. In the New Testament, the Apostle Paul in Romans chapter 12 and verse 12, as a part of a very important admonition to the Christians there, and therefore to Christians for all time, told them to rejoice in hope, and then he said, be patient in tribulation, continuing steadfastly in prayer. Patient in tribulation. What did he mean? He meant simply steadfastness in difficult times, enduring, being patient, in other words. Another inspired writer in the New Testament, James, wrote these words about this important Christian quality. My brethren, he wrote, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. That's James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4. And then further, blessed is the man, we read, who endures temptation, for when he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised to those who love him. Again from James, this time verse 12 of chapter 1. Now, as we've said, patience indicates steadfastness, endurance under trial. Sometimes the word temptation in the King James translation is used to indicate a test or a trial, or it can be used to indicate the enticement to sin. We know from Scripture that God does not tempt anyone to sin. God cannot be tempted with sin, nor does He tempt anyone else to sin. But we are tested and tried by God. He allows our faith to be tried and to be tested, but He does not tempt us to sin. But Satan does tempt us, and God gives us the means through His Word to endure those temptations and to successfully endure trials and tests of our faith, and to come out on the other side stronger and more faithful than ever, to be made better rather than bitter by life's circumstances. Wouldn't all of us like to live our lives and pattern our lives in such a way as to be able to truly say that with every difficulty, with every trial, and yes, even with Satan's temptations, we are able to endure them, and we're able to come out on the other side of that trial or that temptation, whatever the case may be, stronger, better, and not bitter. Today we're going to look at an Old Testament example of one who was able to endure trials and tribulations, temptations that lead to patience. And that man is Joseph. Joseph's temptations leading to patience. Let's look at them. First of all, as we go back to the account of Joseph in the Old Testament, beginning in Genesis 37, we first of all see that Joseph had to endure temptation in the partiality of parents. That's right. There was some partiality on the part of Jacob, Joseph's father, that led to the envy and jealousy of his brothers and thus caused Joseph to have to endure their hatred and the temptations that that kind of conflict brought to his life. In Genesis 37, in the early part of the chapter, at verse 3 specifically, we find that Israel, that is Jacob, the other name for Jacob, Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age. Also, he made him a tunic of many colors. Joseph and his coat of many colors. That is certainly a very well-known Bible account. But notice the partiality of Jacob toward Joseph. He loved him more than all his children because he was the son of his old age. But notice what is said in the next verse. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. His brothers hated him. Now, one temptation immediately that we see here is that Joseph could have hated in return. He could have returned that hatred. He could have tempted his own brothers with his favored position. In other words, he could have said, "Look, my father loves me more than he loves you." But he didn't do that. He also could have given up because he was not appreciated by his brothers. He could have become despondent and just simply given up and said, "What's the use?" But he didn't do any of that. Why not? How did he resist? He trusted in God. He had tremendous faith in God, as we shall see as we continue to look at the account of Joseph in these latter chapters of Genesis. He had tremendous trust and faith in God, but also Jacob, though he did display partiality toward Joseph, obviously was a good man, a man of God, and Jacob, as he had matured and grown in his own faith, had no doubt trained his son. And so he had parents who had no doubt given him the kind of training that developed that trust and that faith in God, and it was in this way that he was able to resist these temptations in the partiality of parents. But we also see that there were temptations in the poverty of slavery. Temptations in the poverty of slavery. Because you see, what happened was that Joseph was sold into slavery because of the jealousy of his brothers. When we look at Genesis 39, as we continue this account, just the first verse of that chapter simply reminds us, "Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there." Now, you remember the story. What had happened was that Joseph was sent by Jacob to his brothers out in the field, and when he came to them, because of their jealousy, they had plotted to kill him. But they put him in a pit while they were contemplating the situation. They put him in the pit, but Reuben, remember, the oldest son, had determined to rescue Joseph. And so he was the instigator of the plan by which Joseph was saved from being killed, and thus the alternate plan was initiated, which was to sell him into Egyptian slavery to the Ishmaelites, who ultimately took him to Egypt. But they had to tell their father something. They could obviously not tell Jacob that they had sold their brother into slavery. And so, remember, they killed the animal, put the blood on Joseph's coat after they had stripped him of his coat, obviously. And they represented to the father when they went back home that Joseph had been killed by a wild animal. And, of course, Jacob grieved greatly over the loss of his son. Now then, in the verse we just read, Genesis 39, verse 1, we see that Joseph had been taken down to Egypt and had been taken to the house of Potiphar. What humiliation he has suffered. Think of the humiliation of being a slave. And there's the temptation. The temptation to become sour, sullen, and cynical toward the world. How did he overcome this temptation? Joseph had a strong faith that God was with him as much in slavery as when he was the favored son of Jacob, his father. There's a New Testament application from Ephesians 6, 5 through 8 that needs to be made here. There Paul wrote, "Bondservants, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in sincerity of heart, as to Christ, not with eye service as men pleasers, but as bondservants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart with good will, showing service," or doing service, "as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatever good anyone does, he will receive the same from the Lord, whether he is a slave or free." You see, the point is that Joseph understood that God was still his father. God was still his God, in slavery in that position as he was with him when he was the favorite son of his father Jacob. But then we also see that there were temptations in the prosperity of Egypt, because you see there were some developments after Joseph got down into Egypt that very much benefited him and brought him to a position of prosperity. In Genesis 39 and verse 6, Potiphar had really come to appreciate Joseph fully and had great confidence in him. And verse 6 says, "Thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hand." Joseph was his steward. He trusted him with everything. "Thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate." Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. That's going to lead us to another temptation in just a few moments because of Potiphar's wife. But think about the temptation now. Joseph has trusted God. He has never lost faith in God. And now he's been brought to a position of prosperity in Egypt. He is a favored servant in Potiphar's house, Potiphar being a very influential man in Egypt. But what's the temptation here? The temptation here is to forget God. And that's the lesson that all of us must appreciate. That in the good times, there is the temptation to forget God. It takes us back to what Moses wrote in Deuteronomy 6 and verse 12. What he spoke to the people as he warned them about what could happen when they were brought, ultimately, that second generation of Israelites, into the land of Canaan, into the land of promise. In Deuteronomy 6, verses 10 through 12, listen to what Moses said. "So it shall be, when the Lord your God brings you into the land of which he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you large and beautiful cities which you did not build, houses full of all good things which you did not fill, hewn out wells which you did not dig, vineyards and olive trees which you did not plant, when you have eaten and are full," here's the warning now, verse 12, Deuteronomy 6, "then beware lest you forget the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage." In other words, when you prosper in the land of promise, beware lest you forget the Lord who brought you out of the house of bondage and into this promised land. You see, there's the temptation to feel in prosperity and in good times, in other words, that we do not need God. There's a New Testament application here as well. Remember in Luke chapter 12, verses 16 through 21, Jesus spake a parable to them, saying, "The ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, 'What shall I do, since I have no room to store my crop?' So he said, 'I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater. And there I will store all my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease. Eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided?'" Then Jesus makes the application. "So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." The emphasis on the material, the tendencies to forget God and to think we need nothing and need no one, especially God. There's the great temptation. And that was the temptation Joseph faced. How did he overcome it? He simply recognized the source of his prosperity. It is a simple solution, isn't it? Never forget the source of prosperity. He thanked God for his prosperity. He saw God's providence in his promotion in the house of Potiphar. There's a passage in the Psalms that has application here as well. The 107th Psalm is a great psalm that depicts time and again, in various ways, the goodness of God. In fact, The psalm begins, "Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for He is good, for His mercy endures forever." And that verse is repeated three other times in this great psalm. But the last verse of the 107th psalm reads, "Whoever is wise will observe these things, and they will understand the loving kindness of the Lord." You see, we must understand the loving kindness of the Lord and know that He is the source of any prosperity that we enjoy. That's what we must appreciate. Now, Joseph was able to overcome the temptation in prosperity by thanking God and recognizing God as the source of his prosperity. But as we continue this account of Joseph, we see that while he was in Potiphar's house, there was temptation that he had to endure there. Again, back to Genesis 39, beginning at verse 7. "It came to pass after these things that his master's wife," Potiphar's wife, "cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, 'Lie with me. Lie with me.'" This was a tremendous temptation. It was a temptation for this young man. And let's keep in mind the fact that Joseph, when he was sold into slavery, was a young man of approximately 17 years of age. Here was a temptation on his part now to compromise, because, you see, this could have meant further advancement. He could have thought, "Well, if I don't succumb to this temptation and I turn Potiphar's wife against me, she could turn Potiphar against me." He could have reasoned that way. He could have said it could have meant advancement for me. But obviously, he didn't reason in that way. But she was persistent. There also was the temptation to rationalize. Not only to compromise, but the temptation to rationalize. You see, he was a long way from home, Joseph was. He was a young man, as we have already pointed out. And so he could have simply said, "Well, you know, after all, God has brought me into these circumstances. How can he expect someone of my age, under this kind of pressure, to be able to endure this kind of temptation?" He could have rationalized, but he didn't. He overcame this temptation as he overcame the others. You see, he had prepared himself to protect his character. He saw sin for what it was. He saw sin for what it was, and he called it that. We go back to Joseph's own statement in chapter 39 of Genesis in verse 9. He said, "There's no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you." He's speaking now to Potiphar's wife, "because you are his wife." You see, everything else had been placed in Joseph's hand, under his care, but not Potiphar's wife, of course. Then he asked this question, "How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Oh, how we need such recognition of sin in today's world. There's a psalm that is one of the ethical psalms, Psalm 15, that needs to be read and applied by so many in our society and throughout our world today. It's a psalm that begins with the question, "Lord, who may abide in your tabernacle? Who may dwell in your holy hill?" And then the description is, "He who walks uprightly and works righteousness and speaks the truth in his heart, he who does not backbite with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor does he take up a reproach against his friend." And then the psalmist said, "In whose eyes a vile person is despised, but he honors those who fear the Lord." In other words, the one who is pleasing to God is one in whose eyes a vile person is despised. In other words, a person who recognizes sin for what it is and recognizes a vile person for just who he is. No, we do not hate the sinner if we're God's people, but we hate the sin in which those sinners are involved. And we recognize sin as sin. You see, There are so many in our society, in our world, who practice situation ethics and who justify their behavior based upon the circumstances. Oh, well, if I'm in a particular circumstance, everyone understands, and God included, that I simply had to do what I did. I was forced to steal, or I was forced to do this. No. Situation ethics is not scriptural. Scriptural ethics are clearly defined, and Joseph understood them. You know, there is the adage today that when it comes to sexual immorality, abstinence is best. No, abstinence is Bible. Abstinence is Bible. That's what the Bible teaches. And Joseph understood that principle. And so he fled from sin. He didn't flirt with it, as so many do, before ultimately falling headlong into it. But Joseph fled from sin. Reminds us of what Paul wrote to Timothy in 2 Timothy 2:22, where he wrote, "Flee also youthful lust, but pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart." That's what we must do. Flee from sin and not flirt with it. But then let's notice that Joseph, after he had fled from sin, and literally he did flee, in fact, left his garment in Potiphar's wife's hand. And of course, we know what happened then. If we review the account, she lied. She claimed that Joseph had approached her, and it was just the opposite. She told Potiphar that's what had happened because she was a scorned woman, and she was vengeful. And look what happened to Joseph as a result of fleeing from sin and doing what God wanted him to do. He winds up in prison. And so in Genesis 39, verses 21 through 23, "But the Lord was with Joseph, even in prison, and showed him mercy, and he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever they did there, it was his doing. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's authority, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper." Now, the temptation here in prison was to distrust God again, because he could have said, "I did the right thing. I fled from temptation, and it landed me in prison." And so the temptation was to distrust God. And this happens when the righteous suffer and the wicked prosper. There was a temptation to give up at this point and say, "Look, I have tried to do right. I've done everything that I could to please God, and look where it has gotten me." How did he overcome? Well, he did not judge God by what happened in one day. He looked to tomorrow. He looked to the next day. His body was shackled in prison, but not his spirit. Reminds us of Paul and Silas in Acts 16:25, where they were singing praises to God. And look at the result of this kind of spirit in these men in both of these cases. The jailer, in the case of Paul and Silas, was converted. And Joseph's faithfulness led to the salvation of many. But then also, we see one other temptation, and that is the temptation to get even with his brothers. Temptation in a position of power, we would say. And that is when he has been elevated second only in power to Pharaoh. And of course, time does not permit us to fill in all of the details, but his brothers have, because of the famine, come down into Egypt, and ultimately, Joseph makes himself known to them. Oh, he could have punished them severely, couldn't he? The temptation to get even. How did he overcome? He didn't allow the passing years to fill him with hatred. He practiced forgiveness all of his life. And when we read Genesis 45, 5 through 8, we see his own admission that he saw the hand of God in everything that had happened. He saw the good that resulted. It takes us back to Psalm 107, 43, doesn't it? Whoever is wise, whoever is really understanding, will see the loving kindness of God in these things. You see, Joseph's perception of God led him through temptation, all of the temptations, to patience, to endurance.